Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast with me, Kevin Miller. On this podcast, you're going to hear some awesome interviews from business leaders, experts, and entrepreneurs as they share their story, their journey, and some expert tips and insight of the things they've learned along the way. So sit back, enjoy, learn, and grow. And thanks for joining me. Today's interview is pretty unique. This Scotsman is coming to you from the Wet Sundays in Queensland with a Tasmanian currently in London. I never thought I'd say that in the same sentence. 78-year-old Bob Cheek is a former politician, journal, published author, and a successful businessman who has a unique and interesting story of his own. At 65 years old, he kicked off his single location 24-hour gym Zap Fitness from scratch in Rosny Park, Tassie, after an impromptu visit to the US. Fast forward 8 years and the business later sold for over $50 million with 37 gyms across three states and 30,000 members in Tasmania alone. He shares this fantastic journey in his new book, Dumbbells to Diamonds, 33 Workouts to Mega Wealth, and have the pleasure of his company this morning. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure, pleasure. Wet Sundays, Queensland, Tasmanian, London. It's a strange chat this morning.
It certainly is. Well, it's a beautiful day in London at, what's the time, 6:45 a.m. roughly?
Yeah.
On Monday, and I rode in from Cambridge on my bike journey that I'm doing to try to show that I've still got it. I'm still fit and well.
Yeah. So look, Bob, we'll talk business. You've got a very fascinating story. Former politician at 65 years old, you started your gym journey, I guess. Started the single gym location at 65 years old, through to selling it for $50 million. Talk us through a little bit about the beginning.
I sort of own gyms on and off over a period of time, but not any single gyms without a great deal of success. And when I went into politics, I still had a gym called Club Salamanca, which was, we christened Club Silly Wanker, because it was supposed to be a high-end club, but it never really made any money. But I couldn't offload it when I went into politics anyway, and my wife looked after it, and it was losing money. And when I came out of politics, I lost my seat. I didn't have superannuation, and I had this loss-making gym, and so I had to do something.
Yeah. So the gym business, actually being in the gym business initially, is that just because of your interest in health and fitness, or is that a natural thing that came to be?
Well, yeah. Look, I played AFL football to a pretty high level. I mean, I played for the Tasmanian state team against Western Australia when it was at full strength, and all the other states at carnivals and everything, and played in Hobart, and didn't go head office to go to the VFL as it was then, but yep, didn't make the move because there was a lot of interest in Tassie football. We used to get 25,000 people to our grand finals, etc. Mm-hmm. So after, and I was a journalist also, yep, Kevin. I mean, I'm a journalist by trade, and I was on a TV show, a Saturday morning TV show, a footy show, okay, after I finished football. And one of the panelists on there each week was the great Peter Hudson, and I was the record for the most goals ever kicked in a season in the AFL with Bob Pratt, 150 goals, and another great player, John Devine, who played for Geelong. And they mentioned to me, this was going back to 1981, they mentioned to me they'd invested in this new gym business, and they were relatively new in those days, run by Ron Clark, who was the champion distance runner for Australia, lit the flame at the 1956 Olympic Games, mm-hmm, and Terry Moore, another partner, and they said they'd invested in it, but it was down on the waterfront in Hobart. I took a 5% share. They got me a 5% share. I think Ron Clark was very grateful to get rid of it because it was an absolute dog. But yep, my mates, after football, went into pubs, a lot of them, and I didn't like stale beer and cigarettes, so I thought the health and fitness industry, even though it was in its infancy, was a good way to go to do something in that area. So we ended up, uh, the, the gym went broke, and I resurrected it and started it off again, and it did all right. So I thought of that, would I build an indoor cricket centre? I had this club, Salamanca. So I'd been in the industry. I knew the industry from a long while ago, but I had been there in the dark old days, and I wasn't very impressed with the gyms, the way they were going. You know, they were, my gym club, Silly Wanker, was a high-end gym with pools and spas, and it was losing money mainly through high overheads. You know, the wages were about 50% of my revenue, and it was it was heading for disaster.
And it's, I guess, back then, you know, obviously you went to the US in March 2008, and that was where the sort of new concepts, the ideas for the new concept and the model for the Zap Fitness sort of journey began. But back then, the gyms were obviously a little bit different to they are now, you know, in the 2000s. You know, they're the way that gyms and health clubs are a slightly different model. So what do you think back then? Why do you think the initial club was making a loss? You know, what was it about it? Was it the model was wrong? Because, was it, obviously you mentioned the cost?
It was, as I said, a high-end club was in the Salamanca region of Hobart, which you would probably know, having been to Tassie.
Yes, and
Battery Point right next door is the higher, you know, the
expensive,
the most salubrious suburb in Hobart, in Sandy Bay. We're trying to run it. It had pools and spas, and people were paying a high price, even if they just wanted to work out on the weights and didn't use the pools and spas. And I always thought there's got to be a better way than this. So when I got out of politics, I basically sulked for 12 months and didn't know what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And it's one of the things I say in my book, you know, you've got to be inquisitive. I mean, you've got to have the attitude to still want to go on and do things in life. But you've got to be inquisitive. And I subscribed to a magazine from the United States, from the fitness industry body over there. And I was looking through, I used to get it each month, and quite often there wasn't much in it. But this particular night, I went home late and I was looking through. They had a section at the back for new clubs that had joined the organization in the United States. And all of a sudden, I saw these names dripping down the page, all these new names, sorts of gyms. And I thought, what the heck is that? So did a little bit more research and jumped on a plane and went over to the United States to have a look. And because I thought, yeah, this could maybe fit what I'm looking to do in Tasmania at that stage.
I think what's surprising for some people, myself included, is that, you know, when you there at that point in time when that initial gym was loss making, some people might sort of look at branching into a different industry altogether and just cutting their losses, you know. But obviously something in you, obviously you've seen the ad in the brochure, but was there a point in time that you sort of felt that you were going to step away from the industry before you took that punt and went to the US?
Yeah, well, look, it was an industry. I mean, I didn't have, I mean, the driving force was I didn't have enough. I didn't want to retire. I mean, you know, I think age is just a mindset. I didn't want to retire, but also even if I did want to, I didn't have enough money to retire, and I wanted to think, well, yes, one day I can if I need to. So it was the industry that I knew, really, Kevin. It was because I'd been in it on and off, and the leisure industry, I sort of knew, wanted to stick to that area, and this was different. So this looked to be different, so I was quite excited, and I thought, if I can start off something different and get away from the model that I've got, well, maybe there's a future in the gym industry after all. Because, you know, the whole thing about the fitness industry is that, you know, you're helping people live healthier, happier, longer lives, and that's pretty good, you know. It's a pretty good business to be in that regard. It's got its under dark side, its underbelly, like a lot of businesses, but it does overall help people, and, you know, I like that thought as well.
Yeah, no, I've spoken with a lot of successful people like yourself, and there's obviously different reasons for starting businesses. There's different reasons that choose to continue down a certain path. Listening to you, what you have to say there, there's a bit of necessity out of it for you as well. You came to the realisation that you didn't have enough to retire straight away at that age, you know, in your 60s. So
I didn't get my superannuation. I became leader of the opposition, leader of the Liberal Party politics. I mean, I was the world's worst politician. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book about that too called Cheeky Confessions of a Cigarette Salesman. And in that, I send myself up pretty much. But, I should never have gone into politics. And in the end, it was a disastrous election and I lost my seat. So, as I said, I sulked for 12 months and really had to do something else because the rivers of gold from superannuation, which politicians get if they stay, I had to stay there 2 terms, 8 years. And because the second one was cut short, I was there for about 7 odd years. So, I feel really good now that I didn't take money from the taxpayers. I did it myself to be funded, but at that time I would have taken it. Don't be worried.
It's a fantastic to hear the way that you recount it in terms of seeing an ad to then, essentially on a whim, is that fair to say? Essentially on a whim, booking a ticket and going, you know what, I'm going to have one last shot at this and head over to the US. Is that how it played out?
It was pretty much the last roll of the dice. I jumped on the plane, used my last few dollars from economy ticket and flew over to the States. I hired a car and drove down the Californian coast, put on the Beach Boys and tried to get in the mood for it all. And I knew there was one of these in San Diego, and I've been to San Diego before, so I had an idea where it was. And I got down there, and it was a Sunday morning, and I thought, oh, well, in those days, gyms open from 9 to 4 on Sunday, and, the restricted opening hours, and people were, it was fairly late, and I could see people through the door, working out, and it was a real vibrant atmosphere to it, and I just thought, my God, what's going on? So I knocked on the door, and they said, sorry, mate, you can't come in, you're not a member. But then one of the members actually let me in, and I had a good chat to them all, and he knew it all pretty well. And I just thought, wow, this is incredible, And there weren't even many in the United States then. Mm-hmm. But I thought, if I can make this work back in Australia, whereas my wages, because the trouble is with gyms, they tend to lose money because they over-service. They try to give too much service. They think they've got to give a lot of service in high-end clubs. But this, so my wages were 40 to 50% of my revenue.
Yes.
And this one was like about 7 to 10% because I was only staffed 40 hours a week and they had a key, they can come in any time. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. That's what I was thinking that needed to happen, but they've actually done it here. So I was very excited. So I got back in the car and went to another one in, I think, Pasadena and around there and came home and thought, well, actually, I was driving back through the Hollywood Hills on the way back to the airport, and I thought, what am I going to call this thing? What will I call it, And I thought, what's going to happen when people go through the door? They're going to zap the key. They honestly came up with that in about 30 seconds, whereas you can try to come up with names of businesses, and I've tried to do it. You can think for months, and you still can't come up with a decent name. So it just came to me like a bolt of lightning.
Well, you've preempted one of my questions there, Bob, because I was going to ask you where the name came from. So that's answered.
It was just zapping the key, some people didn't like it. They said it sounded like a dead fly. I suppose, zapping insects. Advertising person said, it's the lowest quartile of the alphabet. That's not good, but I stuck with the name and it ended up being good. It's just short zap. And, I had to put that it was a 24-hour gym because nobody knew what the hell they were at that stage.
Yeah.
You work out night and day just to clarify the name. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it worked well. And the brand, I don't know whether I'm getting ahead of myself, but with this, I didn't have the money to put into it at all. I didn't have any capital, really. So, I started the whole business with nothing. It was actually built on nothing because I didn't own the buildings and I got the landlords to do a lot of the work and I hired all the equipment. So what I got the money for in the end was that brilliant brand of Zap. That's what it was. It's the brand that counts and the marketing of the brand.
What I hear, Bob, is that, first of all, I think it's fantastic, and I hear the inquisitive nature that you referred to earlier, about being inquisitive and asking questions. And to hear you to carry that through into a completely different country. You've obviously got an inquisitive nature yourself anyway. You're knocking on doors essentially, aren't you? Knocking on the door of the gym, finding information.
I suppose I'm an old journal. I've always been inquisitive about things. But I think people, as they get older, they get a bit set in their ways, and they sort of think they know. A lot of people, not everyone, but they think they know everything, and they don't want to know any other way, or you know, they don't want to see anything differently. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit sad, really. So because you've got to be aware of what's going on, and you've got to be a sticky beak and be inquisitive, you know. So it's a good trait to have.
Talking about being inquisitive, I'm a little bit curious about what your family was thinking at that point, Bob. You know, to use your words, last roll of the dice, heading over to another country, other side of the world. What's the conversation with the family before, or the missus, before you head off to the US? Well, how does that play out?
Well, my wife just wanted to be out of Salamanca, the high-end gym. She'd had enough looking out for me while I was, you know, playing with politics. So she wanted to retire. So I said, well, if I can get something started, you can retire. Yeah. My family was pretty much grown up, so, you know, there wasn't young kids or anything to think of at that stage. Mm-hmm. But they were thinking, they thought I'd gone a little bit crazy because most people were just, you know, golfing and gardening and sort of doing more gentle pursuits at that stage instead of heading off to America trying to start a new business.
Well, I think it's very reassuring, and you know, there's definitely something to be said about. There is a lot of people later on in their life, you know, maybe not in their 60s, but maybe in their 40s, 50s, who feel that they can't reinvent themselves. Essentially, they can't change direction, they can't change pathways. And listening to somebody like yourself talk about that, I think it's very refreshing for people to hear.
Yeah, well, I feel sorry for some people who do. Like that. I mean, some people are very old at 50. Other people at 70 are not old, and I think there's a reason for that. A lot of people tend to stay in the one job, and they hate the job, and therefore, because they don't like the job that they're doing, they can't wait for retirement. You know, they want to get out of 55 if they can, and 60 just to get away from the job. So I think, you know, you've got to, I mean, life's all about risk-taking as far as I'm concerned, and the challenges, and if you're not taking risks, you're not living life. So appeal to people, if they don't like their job, don't stay there, you know, get out and try something else, because you don't want to get to the back end of your life and regret. I've always tried to project myself forward 10 years and stay, you know, I said, well, I regret not having to go open these 24-hour gyms in 10 years' time, and I didn't know how successful they were going to be, but I thought, yep, I will. So if you put yourself forward 10 years and think, well, I regret not having done something else, I think that helps.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. Yeah, definitely. So you come back to Tassie, Bob. 24-hour gym is the concept in the US, essentially. You come back to Tassie. Have you got a spring in your step, or you're full of energy? What's the sort of first thing you do when you get back to Tassie? What's the plan?
A lot of apprehension. I wanted to get sights. And I went to a real estate agency and said, look, I want to get 15 sites for gyms around the new sort of gym. I didn't say what, around Tasmania. And they sort of, I knew the guy there too, and looked at me and thought, oh yeah, he's gone mad.
Because Tassie's a small place, Bob. So, like, are you a little bit? Well, it's not a small place geographically, really, but it's a small place in terms of it can be quite a small town. So, are you a bit guarded in terms of your idea and your concept? Are you worried that somebody else is going to jump on and get in there before you?
That's why I wanted to move pretty quickly. I mean, the concept, it takes a bit of setting up, or it did in those days, because you've got to get all the systems in place, and I wanted to do it a bit different way to the United States. And the thing is, it's all franchises over there, and I didn't want a franchise. I mean, we built all these. We didn't franchise at all. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, yeah.
So I was a bit ambitious because I wanted to cover the state quickly, so we'd always be Fortress Tasmania, I called it, you know, for having these if they could take off. So I know Tasmania well, having lived there all my life, and I knew exactly where to put them, and that was a big advantage. But it took ages to get the first one off the ground because this crowd, I won't mention their name, obviously, they 6 weeks later, they hadn't done anything. So I went out and just did it myself with individual agents. And I was lucky in some ways. Who would have thought that video stores had boomed, you know, in the 70s and 80s, would suddenly become great sites for 24-hour gyms. That's the way the world evolved.
Yeah, true.
So they were all closing down. This is, you know, 2009. Mm-hmm. And they were ideal sites for gyms, and the landlords were quite, and the GST had just hit or just passed, so I was able to pick up some pretty good sites fairly quickly. But getting council approval, that was the problem, because my first one at Rosny Park on the Eastern Shore of Hobart, the Clarence Council there, they didn't want to know about it. I mean, they thought, oh, you know, it was mad. They thought there were going to be rapes and murders and thefts pillage and everything, because how could you run a gym with 24 hours? They wanted me to put security guards in there, and they wanted police to be there, and, you know, and it was a nightmare because they thought it was going to be a risk. They thought it was going to be a headquarters for bikie gangs and drugs, so you've got no idea.
Was there anybody else doing it in Australia at that point, Bob? I'm curious. I'm not familiar myself.
No, it was just in its infancy. There was another crowd in Queensland called Jets that had started dabbling in it, and there was also another crowd which became, I knew the people actually, went to the States and got a master franchise called Anytime Fitness, and that brought that back to the mainland.
Yep, familiar with that.
But there was nothing in Tasmania, and there was hardly anything in Australia. I mean, there could have been a few, but there was certainly in Tasmania, nobody had ever heard of them, and nobody believed that you could actually go in and work out in the gym any time of the night or day and stay safe. I mean, they thought women would be vulnerable. But the systems we put in place, you know, the surveillance cameras, and I had less trouble in the 24-hour gyms than actually did in the high-end gym, because we virtually had no change rooms. You know, they were just, you know, you could get changed. There were toilets, unisex toilets. But the change rooms and lockers are where thefts take place. You can't put cameras in there. Mm-hmm. So the key to it all was actually, I had a friend in Hobart, Mark West, who was an insurance broker. And when I first went to him about getting insurance, he said, "Geez, are you serious insuring that?" But in the end, he got the insurance by a crowd that took a punt on it. And once the council saw that I had insurance, somebody was going to insure the whole thing. Gradually they came around, but it took more than 12 months before the first one happened. It was a bit of a nightmare, and I was thinking, why, you know, I should have done something else.
No, I mean, when you look at, you know, when you hear that now, thinking back, you know, to me, 24-hour gyms is a common thing now, isn't it? You know, they're 24-hour.
Oh, look, they're on every street corner. I mean, I would never go into anything like that now. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's the place to the space where people want to be now, you know, they just, everybody wants to be in the health and wellness industry, you know, in some way, especially the younger generation. I mean, there was 60% of our members were under 30 and 80% were under 40 and they had an old bloke like me running it all. But it kept me young, you know, mixing with young people and seeing them all, and became, the gyms became, I don't know, the new sort of meeting places for young people.
My
day, they used to go to the pub. I used to go to the pub and meet a few mates. But they got their girlfriends and boyfriends, and they all go in there, you know, on their Instagram and snapping themselves, you know, buffed up and sitting around. I had, in the first gym, there was people per square meter, but it was so crowded you couldn't get enough equipment. But it was the vibe. They'd just go in there and talk and chat and laugh. You know, it was just a sort of vibrant place to be. So it was like the new meeting place for, you know, the new generation of kids.
Well, I think it's brilliant, though. It's getting in ahead of the curve, Bob. You know, that it's the success of getting in at the start of something. You know, it's fantastic.
You're absolutely right. Getting in early and riding the wave. Look, I was lucky. I was lucky that I recognised it early and got on the trend. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realise how big it'd be. But I got into it and I rode the wave.
Do you think that's because of your circumstance? You were receptive to, you know, because you were kind of in a little bit of a lull, let's say, you were more aware of opportunities, or you're looking for opportunities rather than if you're preoccupied with something else?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I mean, it certainly focuses your mind when you haven't, you know, when you need to make a few quid to be able to live the life you want to in your later years, and you don't know what's going to happen with sickness or anything. And I've always been fairly focused. I've always had my 5-year, 10-year plans, and I've always believed in, you know, the main thing is to have a go. I've always believed in having a go, you know, good old Australian, have a crack, because you'll always be sorry if you don't. And so I was determined, I mean, I worked, you know, I worked literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Pardon the pun,
But the thing is, I loved every minute of it. It was just like a magic carpet ride. I mean, it was such a high. I mean, you had your setbacks too occasionally, but it was such a high seeing these things succeed and your own brand that you'd thought of in 30 seconds set up, and, you know, and it just became a fantastic journey to be on, and I never wanted it to end, really.
What would you say to someone now, or do you think that there is the same opportunity for people that are listening or that are entrepreneurial thinking? You know, that they is there still opportunities for people out there to get ahead of the curve with a new concept, or do you think things are a bit too saturated nowadays?
No, there's always ways. If you're smart enough and you're determined enough, you can always come up with new things. I mean, a lot of it's in the IT space now, of course, but there's still opportunities there. As I said, it's a matter of spotting the trend and getting in early, and I was lucky I rode the wave. But there's always opportunities out there. There'll always be opportunities to learn if you want to take them.
What can you share about, you know, the red tape side of things for someone, especially having premises? You know, it's apparent across all lines of business, anywhere that there's a local government involved or council approvals involved, you know, you can come up against stumbling blocks, can't you? So what can you share about that experience that others can learn from?
Yeah, nightmare experience of, you know, I had people that actually didn't want this to go ahead because they didn't think it would work, so they put every hurdle possible in front of me that I had to do. They wanted to put up counters to count the number of people going into the gym, and there was environmental concerns. They put everything. I mean, any businessman, I think, comes up against this. I mean, I think the red tape in councils and government is an absolute disgrace. It's one of the reasons I went into Parliament, was to try to do something about that on behalf of business. But it's got worse now. It's just get on to your premiers and politicians, get on to Mark McGuinness and tell him to make it easier over in the West.
That's right, yeah. And just keep trying, basically. Just keep going at it. Keep going hard. Go hard at it.
Well, you don't want to give up, because you'll always regret it if you do. You'll be thinking, you know, you don't want to be walking around saying, when somebody else comes up with the idea and actually does it, I thought of that five years ago. Yeah. Oh, yeah, but I had all this trouble doing it, all this red tape, and it was so hard for me. But, you know, business is not easy, you know. It's hard going. But as my old dad said to me, the one saying he gave me, which I remembered all my life, was, don't get off your bike, son, keep pedalling. And I always remembered that through my life. Things get tough. I used to say, okay, Dad, I'm still pedalling. And I think, don't get off your bike, keep pedalling. It's a pretty good adage to have.
Yeah, keep going at it. Talk us a bit through how you go from, you know, identifying the premises, you know, the council approval and getting the premises up and running. You've got the 24-hour concept, the system, you're creating your own systems with the surveillance and access keys and, you know, all the ingenuity that you're creating within the business. But how does it go to, you know, a $50 million sale, Bob, at the end of the day? You know, how does that play out? I guess at the beginning you weren't thinking that was going to happen. So how does it sort of pan out for those 8 years later?
Oh, no, well, I was lucky because, as I said, it was, I had a go, but I was lucky. I mean, I think life is all about luck and timing, but you've got to be having a go.
Yeah.
And the first one I opened at Rosny Park, I mean, I just put out, there wasn't any, you know, digital marketing, social media in those days, or not yet. It was only in its infancy, so just flyers around and a local newspaper, and I just said, you can join this gym, you can go and work out 24 hours a day, and it'll cost you less than 3 cups of coffee a week. Yeah. Probably 1 cup of coffee a week now.
true.
Look, we had 700 members before we opened the doors. It just caught fire.
Mm-hmm.
And
and why do you think that is, though? What, why, Bob? Is it the like a new thing, you know, something new, something shiny?
I was charging $27.95 a week in Club Salamanca.
Yeah.
And this was $8.95 a week. And I could do that because the wages were down, the overheads were down, and I could increase the volume that went into the place. Mm-hmm. I had good equipment, you know, it was Life Fitness equipment, and, you know, that was on higher purchase. But I don't know, it was just word of mouth on the Eastern Shore. People thought I was a 24-hour gym, and it's $8.95 a week, you know, and you can cancel any time. I mean, we were the only gym in Australia, it probably still is that, where now the new owners have probably changed, but where people could literally cancel any time, you know. I mean, I wanted to stand by the quality of the place, so they could come in the next day and cancel, and we'd cancel it. Mm-hmm. Every other gym say they have cancel any time, but usually you've got to give 4 weeks' notice, you know. You can cancel any time, but you've got to, you know, pay for another 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And that appealed to people as well, you know. Then they said, oh, well, we can come in and try it out, but they never left. And as I said, it was the most successful, ended up the most successful gym in Australia. It was only 340 square metres. We had nearly 2,000 members in there, you know. Yeah. You can imagine what that was.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And you're talking about planning earlier, but that was the trouble. I had other sites. I had another one at Glenorchy in Tasmania and Devonport on the northwest coast. I mean, I knew exactly where I wanted to go, but because of the planning difficulties, we opened this one in March 2009, and I couldn't get anything else open. They both opened together in October because of the different councils and approvals. So, you know, I had two opening in October and I had to wait that long, and it was pretty difficult. Devonport is, what, you know, three and a half hours from Hobart, so traveling between the two of those and trying to do them both at the same time is a bit difficult. But they all were successful, and they all, you know, it was just a matter of being able to get them open and marketed and get them going. And so they were cash flow positive from day one. The gym industry is a very unique industry, but it's a wonderful industry in the fact if you can get the members in there, it's a dedicated cash flow, predictable cash flow, because you've got your fortnightly direct debits and you know exactly what you're going to bring in.
Yep.
Each time, so each fortnight, each month, so you can do it weekly if you want to. Mm-hmm. Whereas other retailers, they don't know what they're going to make. You know, they don't know how much they're going to sell. We know exactly, so you can plan. So,
yeah, you know, I think that's very, very valuable, actually. You know, a membership-based business, which obviously the gym is, it does allow, you know, there's lots of membership-type concepts nowadays. You know, online businesses have memberships that they sell to people, you know, and I think that that in itself is a great way to forecast, isn't it, when you know what you're getting coming in the door, basically.
And it was pretty much unheard of at that time. I mean, they had sort of monthly, you know, direct debits, but to bring it down to, well, we did fortnightly, and to say, you know, you can cancel it, usually you had got to join for 12 months or 2 years or 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a totally different concept. So, I said in an interview I'd like to put one on every street corner in Tasmania. I didn't quite do that, but I put 23 in Tassie, and they were all pretty much very successful. In the end, I had to go to smaller places, and Tasmania, you know, it's only a 500,000-odd population overall. But they're all successful, and the Golden Triangle, as I used to call it, at Rosny, Kingston, and Moona, Glenorchy in Hobart, they were just fabulous. Some of the most profitable gyms in Australia.
Do you think, Bob, that the concept helped in terms of, for you as a business owner, for you running a business, essentially, which a lot of people will be able to relate to, if you have a bricks and mortar store that, as a business owner, you have to be there and open the door and turn the key and open it every other day versus something that you can kind of run from afar that has systems that you don't need to be there every waking second. Did that allow you to grow the business quicker, do you think?
Oh, yeah, it did. I was able to, you know, I can travel anywhere in the world and run the business, basically. And that made a massive difference. And just having, you know, someone for 40 hours and then coming in with a key anytime they wanted to. And, you know, we had cameras on them to see of coming, and we, you know, went through it the next morning. If anybody tried to get in, that was the other thing. I said, oh, everybody, we're coming in that aren't members. But the members are pretty good at catching people themselves, and a few might have got through, but mostly they were caught on camera. We took a photo of them first when they first joined, and then the photos that came through the door.
Yeah.
If they didn't match up, they were in big trouble.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, the adaptability of it, being able to do that, and they'd run themselves. I mean, I could virtually, in the end, you know, you could just go away and almost for 12 months and not even bother with them, they'd still run themselves.
So. Yeah. You know, that, Bob, that is something I think that, you know, from experience and from the people that I've dealt with in the past, it is something that a lot of people can be guilty of, business owners, because they put their name on the door, they put their telephone number on the website, and then they're, you know, that's a glutton for punishment then, because you're the one and only go-to person, you know?
Well, I always thought that my big ambition all my life was to have a business where I didn't have to be there all the time, and I didn't want to be the front man. I mean, you might as well, can nothing against fish and chip shops, but, you know, fish and chip shop and owner has to be there all the time, you know, or whatever, small business. They've got to be there, and they do. They might even call it after themselves, you know, Bob's Gym or something, and then everybody's saying, well, where's Bob?
Yeah.
So, yeah, for the first time I had a business that I didn't have to be there, and I just did the, you know, the finances and other things, and oversaw the marketing and other things, but I could be anywhere. When they were booming, I spent 3 months, you know, sailing through the Caribbean, because to be honest, I'd made enough money to be able to do that, and I ran the business just sitting under a palm tree in the Caribbean.
Yeah, and that's the dream, isn't it?
That's a business, in my view, that's a business, that's a real business.
Yeah. And you were consciously, that was a conscious thing. You wanted to do that is what you're saying. You set out to do that from the beginning, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I worked hard to set them up initially. But then when they started to take off, I was able to do that. I had good people working for me, I was able to do that. And that was amazing. I think I applaud people who go in and, you know, work all the time in the business after it's done, and have got to do that. But, you know, if you've got to count their salary as being a major part of the business, you know, that they've got to be there all the time, I don't think it's a true business. And they'll end up burning out very quickly.
So before we go, Bob, I'm curious. I'm just curious, or I think it'd be a great lesson for people to hear about, is to sell in a business, you know, the exit out of the other side of a business. It's fantastic hearing about the journey from starting a business to, you know, to making it work, but the other end of it, how did it play out? Is there anything that you can share about it? Is there anything, lessons from that side of the, I guess, the exit strategy and how you came to sell it?
Exit strategy, yeah. Well, I never had an exit strategy because I actually never wanted to sell it. And
okay.
Then I started to get offers from people. I always said, you know, if people know how to make an offer. I think the great sort of reassuring thing for a business owner is to know your business is worth something. I mean, when you're running a business sometimes, you don't really know what it's worth. You think it's probably worth something, but you don't know. But when you get offers and people put a value on it, you think, okay. So I started getting offers that started, I think it was one for 10 or 12 million in the early days from one of my oppositions that was Anytime Fitness. But I said no because they didn't, you know, in the fitness industry, the multiples are fairly low on your EBITDA.
Yes.
You know, two or three times. And, you know, I wasn't at all interested. I didn't want to sell it. But then I think for me, I would never have flogged the business. I would never have put it on the market. I think if you put a business on the chopping block and say, I want to sell it, people think, why does he want to sell it? So yes. I was lucky that I didn't want to sell it.
Yeah.
And so I had the luxury of, knocking the back offers until Fitness and Lifestyle Group, who own, you know, Good Life and Fitness First and a lot of others, they kept on coming back and kept on increasing their offer. And in the end, I had a little bit of trouble with a bank with direct debits, and a few little things went wrong, and everybody was saying, my family was saying, for goodness sake, you're well into your 70s. What are you doing? Take it. Take the money and run. What are you doing? You've come from nothing and you've got this now and you want to keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would have done, and I had seller's remorse big time when I first sold it.
Mm-hmm.
But then COVID hit, and I was sort of thanking my lucky stars that I had sold it. So the timing was pretty good on that too. unfortunately, although they're bouncing back now, Jims, and they will. People say that home fitness now is the way to go, you know, and I think people will work out from home probably more, but they always want, you know, the sort of social animals. They always want to get into the gym with other people and work out and have that environment too. So I've got no doubt gyms will continue to be successful and there'll be variations. It's one of those amazing businesses where you can just, you know, you can really get a room and chuck some equipment in there and open up a gym. I mean, there's no barriers to open up in a lot of ways, except for the councils. But, you know, you can open any, and you've just got to come up with a concept in the industry and you can make a fair bit of money out of it. So just coming up with a concept, that's the key.
Well, Bob, look, I take my hat off to you. I mean, it's a fantastic story for one. I hear hard work, I hear resilience, I hear timing. You know, there's so many things that and, you know, it's just a fantastic, there's lots of lessons there for anyone that's aspiring to maybe even sell a business, to start a business, whatever it may be, any business journey. I think listening to what you have to say and, you know, reading a bit more about it in your new book, Dumbbells to Diamonds, there's just some great stuff there to share. So I'm very grateful for you coming on today and sharing a bit about it, mate. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's all right. Kevin, people can go to bobcheek.com if they want to see more about the book as well, if you don't mind me adding that.
Yeah.
But no, look, it's a pleasure and enjoy the Whit Sunday. So I love sharing my experiences with people and I appreciate the time with you.
Pleasure, Bob. It's been absolutely fantastic. If you want to get the book, Dumbbells to Diamonds, 33 Workouts to Mega Wealth, jump onto the website, bobcheek.com. Bob Cheek, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you too, Kevin. All the best.
For joining me on this episode of the Business Growth Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to come back for more, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can catch up with me on social media on Facebook at Make My Business Better, Instagram at Business Growth AU, or you can jump on our website www.businessgrowthperth.com.au. See you next time.